What's the craziest thing you have ever done? Perhaps it was drag racing your friends while driving your sister's car on the way home from a high school basketball game. In theory, no experience there. Perhaps it was riding inside of a shopping cart down the hill on the county road that runs in front of your house that you grew up in. Perhaps it was riding horses on fall break when you have a very cantankerous horse that you're riding. Craziness seems to come into our life in all different ways, at all different kinds of times. But here's what I know. Craziness happens to us all. Sometimes craziness happens on impulse. We act before we think. Afterwards, we look back and ask ourselves, what was I thinking? Only to have that answer, I wasn't. Sometimes it's not on impulse, but craziness happens inconspicuously. We actually think before we act, but our thinking rationalizes our fears because of other people's expectations of what they want us to do or think we should be doing. And we say to ourselves, it can't be that bad. What's the worst that could happen? What could go wrong? And then we're in the middle of it. And we say, what in the world have I gotten myself into? Craziness happens in all sorts of ways and at all different sorts of times. But perhaps an image will help you of this. On Friday, the living room floor was clean. On Friday night, a little girl, you might recognize her, turned one. And the living room floor looked like this, and then it was clean on Saturday morning, and then last night, this is what it looked like. You might say it feels like a little bit of craziness. As cute as that picture is, and I think it's probably the cutest in the whole world, and remember, when it's your sermon, you pick your pictures, but this is mine, so I'll pick mine. It's one thing to see that picture and be an outsider and say, oh, that's cute. That's adorable. It's another when you're always the one coming behind her to clean up the mess that she's in. You know this if you've ever had kids or have kids. You clean up a mess only to do the exact same thing the next day and then the next day. And sometimes you just let it go because you think, what's the point? It's just going to happen again and again and again. It's called the crazy cycle. And that's what I want to try and talk to us about, is that craziness is often more than a feeling. Craziness becomes a normality. It's not just something that happens occasionally, but there are times that we move away from craziness being an action to craziness becoming a way of life. And often we don't recognize it's become a way of life until it's been happening for so long that by the time we look back, we can't pinpoint the event that caused it. Now, sometimes there is an event that causes all the craziness to break loose in our life, but sometimes it's just the building of many events and you do the same thing over and over and over and you find yourself in the crazy cycle of life. Albert Einstein said that insanity or craziness is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result. I think sometimes we know the result will be the same, but we think to ourselves, well, it's better to do something than to do nothing at all. And we hope that somewhere in the midst of this crazy cycle, that something breaks free, that something different begins to happen. You see, I think the only feeling that the crazy cycle produces is that of claustrophobia. The fear of not being able to get out of the cycle that we're in. The story that you heard read for us in Mark chapter 5, verses 2 through 5, I believe tell us what the cycle of crazy looks like. The place that it starts is with rejection. If you look at this first verse, it says, when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. There's significance in there because you know that you've been rejected when the only thing that people identify you by is not by your name, but by your problem. A man with an impure spirit. In fact, I find it interesting that in 20 verses, the name of the man is never revealed. You might think that his name is Legion, but it's not. That's the name of the demons that possessed him. A legion of demons. Translation, an army. About 6,000 foot soldiers was a legion. And so his identity is not in his name. His identity is in his problem. And see, when we experience our identity being in the problem that we're in, we begin to experience rejection. Notice the other thing that it said. It said that a man came. It doesn't say that a wife came on behalf of her husband, or a mother and father came on behalf of their son, or a child came on behalf of their parent. You know what it says? A man came. You see, the paralyzed man in Scripture, he had friends who lowered him through the roof. This man had no one, for he had surely been rejected. Jairus' daughter, we'll talk about next week. She was sick in a bed and dying, and she had a father who would go to Jesus on her behalf, but this man had no one. He had experienced rejection. Sometimes we can be in a problem so long that our identity begins to be defined by the circumstance and the problem that we're in. That we lose who we really are, that everything that we know in life is changing, and we feel this sense of rejection. And guess what happens when we feel rejection? Every one of us will run to isolation. Verse 3, this man lived in the tombs. This man lived in the cemetery. In fact, that name in verse 1, by the way, if you never know how to pronounce a name, say it with confidence. Nobody's going to know the difference either, because they're thinking, I'm glad I don't have to try and pronounce the name. Gronisens. I don't know if that's right or not. It sounded right, didn't it? Scholars are not certain of the location. There's debate if the word means this place or that place or this place, and everyone gives their art. Here's what I'm telling you is, the place was so insignificant that when they wrote this years later, they couldn't even identify the place where he came from. It was so isolated, it must have been off the beaten path, that there was not an exact location. This man came from the tombs. He had been isolated from his family. He had been isolated from his community. He had been isolated from a group of people. Because when we feel rejected, we will become isolated. And here's how we do it. Sometimes we become physically absent. We begin to pour ourselves into our work to keep us away from the problem at home. We begin to pour ourselves into our hobbies to keep us away from the rejection that we feel. Or, what about this? We're physically present, but emotionally absent. We'll be there, but no matter how hard we try, we can't connect to people. And here's the truth of it. We don't want to. When we're in this cycle of crazy and there's so much going on, really the truth is, here's what people become. If they are not a resource for the crazy problem we're in, we have no desire to connect with them. That's where that stems from. So we go from rejection to isolation to limitation. Verse 4, for he had often been chained hand and foot. People tried to limit him, not just for their own safety, but for the safety of this man himself, because we already know that later on we'll read that he cut himself with the rocks and the stones. And so they were trying to protect him, but limitation. You see, when we feel rejected and we begin to isolate ourselves, we will find that we do not have what it takes to overcome the craziness that we're in. we begin to find out just how strong our insecurities are. We begin to find out how much our abilities lack for the circumstance and situation that we're in. And here's what happens. We become limited. And when we feel limited, we really just want to give up altogether. This is the cycle of rejection, but there's two more stages. After we realize our limits and all of this, that in and of ourselves we can't overcome it, then there's desperation. Look at verse 4. He'd not often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. This is more than just sheer physical ability. This was such desperation, he was willing to do whatever it took to get out of the situation that he was in. You know what the text doesn't tell us? It doesn't tell us about the scars that were on his wrists from trying to break the chains that were on him. It doesn't tell us that he walked with a limp, but he had to, because my guess is he wasn't just chained once. He was chained many times before they stopped trying. He probably broke a bone at some point or another and never got to have a cast on it. My guess is he started acting erratically. And when he started acting erratically, he did things that brought pain to his body he didn't feel in the moment, but he would live with for the rest of his life. You see, there will come a place that we become so desperate to get out of the situation that we're in. We will do whatever it takes to get temporary relief from the situation. Can I tell you, desperation is the place of danger. It's where we will make decisions that we will regret for the rest of our life. We will inflict pain upon us and other people. But that's not even in our minds, because we're not able to think rationally. In fact, we would probably say we're acting out of our right mind at this moment because we're so desperate to get out of the cycle that we're in. And then look what happens. Then there's repetition. Verse 5, night and day among the tombs, he would cry out. And he would cut himself with stones. Did you hear it? Night and day. He did the same thing over and over and over. Repetition. I'd say every morning when the sun rose and he found himself still in the midst of his own craziness, here's what I think happened. He felt rejected all over again. Every time that he cut himself with stones, you know why he did? Because he was trying to do something to get relief from the situation that he was in. And when he did, and the first fresh cut happened, it might have gave relief, but then the salt from his own sweat would get in and he'd feel that sting. And my guess is, he felt rejection all over again. And when you feel rejection, there'll be isolation. And isolation, limitation. And limitation, desperation, and then we'll repeat it all over again. The cycle becomes like a vacuum. It's hard to break the suction once it's latched on. I think craziness is like someone hitting the shuffle button on the playlist of our life. You know what the shuffle button is? If you're listening to a playlist, you might put songs in the order that you want to listen to, the way you have them planned. But if you hit shuffle, there will be no rhyme or reason to the order of things. And life often feels like we have this plan and we begin to place them in order, but something happens. Someone touches the shuffle button that we don't think should have permission to touch that. Something changes that we don't want to change, and everything begins to shuffle and it's out of order, and the craziness of the cycle begins to set in. I don't have time to go into it, but I just want to share this with you. A few months ago, I found myself in the middle of this cycle of craziness. Everything in my life that I had known had changed, and it took about 9 months, so you do the math, for it to catch up. It changed what it meant for me to be a father, because I'd never been one. Changed what it meant for me to be a husband. Things were even changing in the church, that the kind of pastor that I had been was not the kind of pastor that the church was calling for, and the kind of pastor that I needed to be, and I think the season is finally over, praise God, is the one that I didn't want to be. Everything that I knew was changing and there was a sense of rejection. And then guess what happened is I began to experience isolation. I remember a conversation with somebody and they were telling me about their big toe hurting. Okay, it was a little more serious than that, but at the time that's what it sounded like to me. And I was trying to connect with them and have compassion for them, but I really didn't. And what you want to scream when you're feeling this craziness is, it's not all about you. Oh, I'm being real now. You're just looking at me. But you see the problem, if it's not all about them, we're wanting it to be all about us. And that train works both ways. And then you begin to experience your limitations and say, well, I don't know that I can be everything God is calling me to be. I can't be the father He wants me to be. I can't be the husband He wants me to be. I can't be the pastor He wants me to be. I'm not equipped for this stuff. I remember praying at that altar one day. And I said, Lord, I lay down my ministry. And what I meant by that is, the way I've done it, operating in my own strengths, I can't do that. And what I was saying is, God, I won't do that. If this is how it will be for the next 30 or 40 years, I'll walk away right now. Because not only is it cheating you, it's cheating the people. I'll go find another job. And never in my life has it been a temptation. But in that moment, it caught me off guard and I begin to feel this desperation. See, well, I'm preaching this out of my inadequacy this morning. I'm not preaching this because I know how to defeat it. So I called a friend, one of my classmates. He's been at his church for over 20 years. And we started talking and he did a stress analysis of all the changes that had happened in Sarah and I's life over the last year. And the danger zone is 400, mine registered 600. And he laughed at me, kind of. He said, Jonathan, he said, you're just wore out. He said, you've hit a wall. He said, I hit mine 10 years into ministry. In August, I started my 10th year of ministry. He said, Jonathan, you need to get away. And so I did. And this isn't a formula that fixes all things, but the only thing that I can tell you is this, is that Jesus still speaks to the craziness of our life. He still speaks to the craziness. I want to tell you today, if you find yourself in the midst of the craziness, is that I don't know how He'll do it. I don't know when He'll do it. There's not a formula, one size fits all for this thing. I just know that we serve a King who speaks to the chaos, and the chaos has to pay attention. You see, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That's Jesus. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and without void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. The translation there, the earth was in chaos. My translation, the earth was in crazy world. It was in crazy mode. And Jesus, do you hear it? And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Let me preach this thing. He was ruling the craziness even while the craziness thought it was ruling Him. And then He began to speak to the chaos, to the craziness, and the world began to form. Because when He speaks to the chaos and the craziness of our life, it has to pay attention to its Creator. It has to pay attention to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And I want you to know that there is another rulership of the crazy. And you don't rule it, and you can't rule it, but He will. And He does. And He speaks to the craziness of our lives. And I can prove it. Look at the Scriptures. If you look at it, Jesus never speaks to the man. The only time He speaks to the man is after the man has spoken to Him. Who does He speak to? He speaks to the demons. He speaks to the craziness of the man's life. And all of a sudden, I find it interesting, the demons recognize who Jesus was, but His own disciples didn't in the storm. Do you remember it? After the storm was calm, they said, who is He? Who is this man? But the demons knew the answer. Do you see it? Son of man, you're the Son of God. You're the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He said, do not send us from the area. That translation can mean do not send us from the dry land. The opposite of the dry land would be the sea, the water. You know why the demon said this? Revelation 21:10, at the end of time, and then Satan will be thrown into the lake. It was a future foretelling of what the demons are going to face at the end of the world. And they were saying, don't do to me now what you're going to do to me then. Let me rule a little bit longer. It's not just that He will set the craziness straight at the end of the world. It's that His rulership starts here and now. It's not just that we're waiting on His kingdom to come. His kingdom is already here. And when we allow Him to rule, He will speak to the craziness. And the craziness has to get in line. It has to begin to form to His purpose and His power. And when He does it, here's what He does. He changes our value. When Jesus speaks to the craziness of our lives, He changes our value. Because what does He do? They negotiate. Okay, don't send us from the dry land. Don't send us from the area. Send us into the herd of pigs. About 2,000. He sends them into the herd of pigs and they run into the lake and they're drowned. This would be in modern day about $2 million. So catch it. The people who were taking care of the herd ran away. But what did they ultimately do? They became afraid of Jesus and begged Him to leave the area. You know what that means? They cared more about what they lost in the herd of pigs than the man who got restored from it. So what Jesus was saying is that to these pig herders, this man was less valuable than the pigs. Here's what Jesus was saying to the man. But you are more valuable than the most costly thing in all the world. You see, when Jesus begins to speak to our chaos, what He's communicating to you and to me is that you are valuable. Jesus went through a storm to get here. He didn't go through the storm for any other reason than to deliver this man. He went through a storm to get to Him. He went through the cross to get to you. He went through hell to get to you. He went through sin and death and grave to get to you. And I want to remind you, you are more valuable than the craziness that's in your life. And when He speaks to the craziness, He changes your value. And when He changes our value, watch, we will change what we value. The man begged Him. He said, let me go with you. We think that this is a remarkable statement of faith. I'm not so sure. I think it was more of a begging, don't leave me here with these people. I just cost them $2 million. They crazy. They gonna kill me. Let me go with you. Because it's always easier to leave the craziness than to stay in it. The temptation is always to get out of the craziness. And I could go a lot of places with this, with poor decisions people make. But it's because they think that if they leave the craziness behind and start over, that the craziness won't follow them. I'm not very old. I know enough about life. Is that sometimes there's enough crazy in me that it will follow me if I choose to go. So you might as well stay where you're at and deal with the crazy there so that the people who know you the best and know about your crazy can be able to say, look what God has done. Jesus may have said, you can't go with me, but guess what? He gave the man the same mission that His disciples were on, to tell of the Lord's mercy, of what the Lord had done for him. You see, people are always more important than their problems. We still have a single mission in this world. And that's to value people more than we value the problems of their life. Sometimes we're quick to push people away because they have problems. Yeah, so do you. And so do I. People still matter more than the problems. So I want you to know, Jesus still speaks to the craziness of our life. But I want you to know that when He does, in order for His rule and reign to be established in our life, He will change our value of ourselves. What we'll find is that we're not rejected, we're accepted by Him. We're not alone, but He is faithful to be with us. The things that limit us, they don't limit Him. When we are desperate, we become desperate not to get out of the situation. We become desperate and seek first the kingdom of God and let the kingdom of God begin to order all these things and they'll be given to us. And then we just put His mission on repeat. Different place, one mission. Different people, one mission. Different problems, one mission. It's simply to speak of the mercy and love of our King. And His name is Jesus.